Welcome to the show. I'm Carl Azus at the CNN Center in Atlanta, Georgia. Today we're starting with a trip to two locations in the Caribbean Sea. The first is the island of Puerto Rico, which is going through a sort of exodus. Puerto Rico is a territory of the U.S. with Commonwealth status. What that means is it has its own government, though it's subject to U.S. federal laws. And even though its residents don't have to pay some U.S. federal taxes, many of them are moving to the U.S. where they will. Puerto Rico is losing its population. Why? Well, it's been in a recession, a period of economic decline for 10 years. People are leaving in search of better opportunities in the United States, and in many cases, they're not moving back. Currently, more Puerto Ricans live in the U.S. than on the island itself, and it may be on track to record the greatest exodus in its history.
$70 billion. Puerto Rico is deep in debt, $70 billion of it, and lenders are knocking on the island door. It's a situation so bad, it's often compared to Greece and Detroit. Tax refunds delayed, home prices cratering, and the population dwindling. 440,000 people have left in the last decade. Puerto Rico's tax base is shrinking. It's in a so-called death spiral. That's according to its governor. And it's not just New York hedge funds that own Puerto Rico's debt. It's grandmas and grandpas who put their life savings into what they thought were safe government bonds. Filing for bankruptcy, cutting federal aid programs. The options are grim. And getting all those parties to agree on a solution will be no easy task.
The second Caribbean location we're visiting is the island nation of Cuba. A seven-day cruise docked in the capital of Havana yesterday. Why is that significant? It sailed from Miami, Florida. As part of the Cold War rivalry between Cuba and the U.S., on-and-off travel restrictions were in place between the two nations. Those were lifted late in 2014 as part of an agreement between U.S. President Barack Obama and Cuban President Raul Castro. President Obama started normalizing relations with Cuba, saying that decades of isolating the island nation, not dealing with it economically or politically, had failed to influence the communist government to improve its human rights record. Critics say Cuba's human rights record hasn't improved under President Obama's policy either. But the cruise ship that docked in Havana Monday is one example of some change between the two countries, even though this voyage almost didn't happen.
The first U.S. to Cuba cruise in nearly four decades is finally underway. One more step towards greater ties between the U.S. and its communist-run neighbor. Some of the 700 passengers aboard Carnival's Fathom Line say they feel like they're making history.
My grandmother went way back in the day before it was ever closed. And so just being able to go there and meet the people and see the people, it'll be meaningful to us.
But it's been anything but smooth sailing for the week-long cruise that will make three stops in Cuba. Cuban Americans protested at Carnival's Miami headquarters after the company said that Cuban law prevented Carnival from accepting bookings from anyone born in Cuba. The island's government says the restrictions on Cubans traveling aboard boats were in place to prevent Cubans from making the often dangerous journey to the United States.
Facing growing public outcry, Carnival said it would delay the cruises until everyone could sail to Cuba. That's when the Cuban government did something completely unexpected and reversed their decades-old policy.
Now, Cuban-born people who have passports issued by Cuba can travel to the island on cruise ships, and the Cuban government has said it will soon ease restrictions on private boats. And not a moment too soon for Carnival.
To be a part of being the first people to be able to sail from the U.S. to Cuba and back, including those who were born in Cuba, is a tremendous privilege and honor.
The Cuban government reversing course happens rarely, even less so to satisfy U.S. business concerns. But apparently opening to U.S. cruise companies and the potential earnings they would bring was just too good an opportunity for Cuba to let sail by.
735 days in North Korea was long enough. That's a quote from U.S. citizen Kenneth Bay, who just gave his first interview since he was released from a North Korean prison in 2014. It's not known exactly why Bae was arrested in 2012. He was a tour operator in North Korea. He was charged with hostile acts. 2 years went by before the U.S. Director of National Intelligence carried a letter from President Obama addressed to North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. U.S. officials say that might have been the high-level attention that North Korea wanted from the U.S. Shortly afterward, Bay was released. He hasn't forgotten his ordeal or what got him through it.
I was the first American ever sent to labor camp in North Korea. And I had to work from 8 o'clock in the morning until 6 o'clock at night, 6 days a week. Working on the field, doing a farming labor, carrying rock and shoveling coal and all those things that was physically very demanding and it was very difficult. Especially I had a back problems and different issues that I had before, even imprisonments. But along the way that I found myself adjusting the life in North Korea prison, just depending upon God and then just solely pretty much living day to day and just live one day at a time. Yeah, hoping that I'll be going home.
Would they tell you, you're not going home? You're going to be here forever? What kind of things would they say to you in the prison?
Well, there's one prosecutor assigned to my case for the last year of my imprisonment. He came to me almost every week and said, no one remembers you. You have been forgotten by people, your governments. You are not going home anytime soon. You'll be here for 15 years. You'll be 60 before you go home.
What would that do to your head?
Obviously, it was very difficult to take it in, but I was still holding on to the promise that it was from when I was praying and from God that He will be my rescuer, and knew that U.S. government would do everything possible that bring me home. So I was holding on to the promise.
From the U.S. East to the Middle East, it's time for the call of the roll. Carmel High School is up first. It's in the town of Paterson, New York, and it's great to see the Rams. Not too far away is the community of Blackwood, New Jersey, and we've got the Lions watching there at Glen Landing Middle School. And from the United Arab Emirates, hello to our viewers at Dubai American Academy. It's in the Emirate of Dubai on the Persian Gulf. A University of Colorado professor says some dogs love a good squeeze. A professional dog trainer says maybe dogs just don't like being snuggled and photographed at the same time. The point, not everyone agrees with a University of British Columbia professor who says dogs hate hugs.
There's nothing like a doggy hug to tug at your heart. But is it mutual? Let's ask the owner of Special Agent Maxwell Smart.
Now, do you think he does love it when you hug him?
I know he does.
Good thing Maxwell isn't smart enough to read Psychology Today. The data says don't hug the dog.
Supposedly, dogs hate it when we hug them.
Really? Not this one. He's a lover, not a fighter.
But according to a new study, almost 82% of dogs show at least one sign of stress while being hugged. Some of the signs, ears down, head turned to avoid eye contact.
Snickers. Can I hug you, sweetheart? Can I hug you, sweetheart?
Submissive eye closing, lip licking, anxious yawning. When psychology professor and dog author Stanley Korn looked at 250 photos from the internet of people hugging their dogs, 4 out of 5 of the dogs showed stress.
The internet is filled with the pictures of happy owners hugging stressed dogs.
Professor Korn says dogs evolve so that their main means of defense is to run away. And what does a hug do? Immobilize them.
So if you hug him, what's he do?
Get on silly.
Professor Korn compares hugging a dog to what one of his aunts used to do.
She came over and grabbed both of my cheeks and she said, oh, you're so cute. Well, I mean, it hurt and I didn't like it at all.
But dog owners aren't buying it.
Does your dog like to be hugged?
He does, yes. He likes to kiss as well.
When I hug him, he leans into me and he seems to be very happy.
Maybe they're just part of the approximately 8% of dogs found to be comfortable getting hugged.
He says that's a full of baloney.
But even Max would probably prefer baloney to a hug. Ginny Mo's CNN.
Look, he's loving it.
Yeah, but I haven't immobilized
him.
New York.
Hard to believe that even in a dog-eat-dog world, our best friends are thinking, how canine get out of this? There are times they seem hungry for affection, not wanting to wag war against someone who unleashes it. It's not a bark or a bite, it's a hug. And unless the stress causes unrest, it paints a pretty picture of puppy love. I'm Carl Azus for CNN Student News.